Welcome to another episode of Learn Buddhism. I'm Alan Pito. One of the most important concepts and teachings in Buddhism is impermanence. And the reason this is so important is because it's really the root of all our problems, but also our liberation. And here's what I mean. When we think of impermanence, and I'm going to explain what this means in this episode, impermanence to us is something that doesn't exist in our mind. And that's not saying that we don't understand that, yes, things will not always be permanent, but we believe that there is something permanent. It might be just a little bit of what we're hanging on to, or this belief in a me, self, I, soul, whatever, that is permanent, unchanging, and independent of other things. But the Buddha said, that is the problem. That belief right there is the problem. Because when you have that belief, you are now grasping, clinging, craving to that idea, that belief in a permanent, unchanging, independent self. And that may not sound like a problem, but the problem is it's illusionary. It doesn't actually exist. So the Buddha says all conditioned phenomena, which includes you and me, are of the nature to be impermanent. We are ever-changing, and we are interdependent upon other things. So it's impossible for anything that's conditioned, that gives rise, to be permanent, unchanging, and independent of other things. And that was really, especially in the Buddha's time, revolutionary. It went against everything else that was being taught. But this is really the heart of the matter in Buddhism, because we may just be thinking about this intellectually right now. We're going, oh, of course, we understand that people will die. We understand that, you know, things won't last forever. We get it. You know, of course, impermanence. We got it, right? But we don't got it. We have some sort of belief, and all of us do, because if we didn't, we would be awakened and residing our true natural state in nirvana. But we have something that is really there that we are grasping to. And that's the problem, if you will, in Buddhism, because we don't really believe in fundamental impermanence as the Buddha taught. And when we do, when we are awakened to that truth that the Buddha taught, we are able to break free from, as the Buddha said, this continuous cycle of forced rebirth. Here's why that's important. So rebirth, and you've heard me talk about this before, this cycle of rebirths that we're in, the samsaric existence, the reason it's a problem is because we are basically prisoners of this. We are shackled to it, and we are forced to be in this continuous cycle of forced rebirths, arising and decreasing, right? So birth and death. And what's happening here is it's going on and on and on and on and on, and each existence is a new creation. And so in Buddhism, there's something called the five aggregates or skandhas. And these are really the building blocks, if you want to think about it that way. The building blocks of what makes you, you and me, me, right? Or all these other conditioned phenomena. They have these building blocks, if you will. But these building blocks, these five aggregates, are impermanent. All right, now take a step back from that, because there's a lot of concepts I've just thrown out at you in just a few minutes here. But when we think about yourself right now, or me, I, right, we're going, well, here's my name. Here's what I believe. I went to school. I've had this job. You know, I have this family and this life and experiences, right? There's a me here. There's an I, a self. And the Buddha says, absolutely. Of course, you absolutely exist right now. No one's saying that you don't. But the problem is, we again have this illusionary, deluded belief in a permanent, unchanging, independent self. So it doesn't mean that you don't exist right now. It just means that this belief that you, even right now, are not changing, you're unchanging, and that you're not dependent upon other things, and that there's some part of you that's permanent, That is actually the illusion. And our mind loves for us to actually believe that, because it then gets us right into what you've heard me talk about before, the three fires or three poisons: greed, anger, ignorance, delusion, right? And so that's a problem, because it, here we go, it creates karmic actions. So karma is actually not a good thing in Buddhism. Well, sometimes it could be good, sometimes it could be bad. There's wholesome and unwholesome karma, but typically we create unwholesome karma. The wholesome karma we talk about in Buddhism is something that leads us towards liberation inside Buddhism. But karma in general is something that we want to end, insofar as it chaining us, forcing us to continuous rebirth, because that is the instigator of rebirth. So, impermanence is important because we don't believe it really exists at a fundamental level. So we start clinging and craving to things that we believe support our belief in this permanent, unchanging, independent self, whatever that means, to whatever degree. Even a little bit there, that's still clinging us and keeping us here in this cycle. So thus we start creating unwholesome karmic actions, you know, based upon the three fires: greed, anger, and ignorance, right? So if you look at the three fires, three poisons, they come about because we are trying to protect this belief in a self, in a permanent, unchanging, independent self, which doesn't exist. We are always changing. We are impermanent creatures, and we are interdependent on other things. And so that's keeping us in this cycle of rebirth. And when we look, go back to that five aggregates, five skandhas, there is one part in there that we can say continues on. So of all those different parts there, there is a consciousness part of the five aggregates. But of all the different levels, if you will, of the consciousness inside of five aggregates, there is what we call a store consciousness. And you can kind of think about it as sort of like planting seeds in the ground in your backyard or inside some type of farm, for example, right? And those seeds are karma. They're karmic seeds, right? And they only give rise when you water them, wholesome or unwholesome. That's why a lot in Buddhism, especially Buddhist practice, we don't want to be watering those unwholesome seeds. We don't want them to bloom. So when karma is created, it's there. You can't get rid of that karma. It's going to come to fruition at some time, right? So whether that's right away, or maybe in the future, or maybe future existences, we don't know. But we don't want to give rise to anything unwholesome, because that takes us just farther away from being awakened, right? And getting to nirvana. So the reason all of this is so important is this store consciousness, these karmic seeds, that's what's continuing on to future existences, not a permanent, unchanging, independent self, such as a soul or a permanent self, if you will, or me or I, something we just believe continues on or just exists, right? This karma continues on, and that is something really, I would say, challenging for us to really comprehend. And that's why I see a lot, especially Western Buddhists, that's really hard for us to grasp, because, right, no, I need to see this scientifically. That's just way, you know, too much. But that's Buddhism. This is why Buddhists practice Buddhism. Right now, me, the me that exists right now, I am a recipient of possibly countless eons of karma that never came to fruition. Maybe it's coming to fruition right now. Maybe my interest in Buddhism was stemmed from prior existences, right? And there's some wholesome karmic seeds that were there that are giving rise or blooming right now because they're being watered was the Buddhist Dharma. So that's helping me in this current existence. And really, it's one of those paid forward type things. There's unlikely me as a layperson is going to be enlightened in this lifetime. So do we still practice? Absolutely. We want to create those karmic actions, so they are seeds, so that they will benefit future existences. Maybe some future existence, which is not me, is going to benefit from this. But what connects me to those future existences is my karma, the karma I'm creating right now. And in a way, I guess you can think about it beyond maybe planting seeds into the ground. It's like future children, if you will, future families, right? So if you have children, right, or grandchildren or anything else like that, they are not you, right? But they have benefited from your actions, and you want to treat them well. You want them to grow and become well-adjusted adults and be successful, right? That's what we want for our karma. We want this karma to benefit these future children, if you will. They're not me, but the karma that we're creating, that's what continues on. So all of that is important when we talk about impermanence, because that even is impermanent. The karma is impermanent, right? Because it has to give this fruition. It has to bloom at some particular time. And what we don't want to do, as I mentioned, is, you know, give water to those bad seeds, if you will, those unwholesome seeds, right? Because it's taking us away from enlightenment. So when we look at impermanence, we're like, well, how do I not just understand this, but how do I practice with impermanence? And this is a great question, because it's one of those things, many, many things, of course, in Buddhism, but it's one of those things that is very hard for us to wrap our heads around. And we have to really step back on any of these Buddhist terms and concepts and teachings, because we want to kind of intellectually understand them, right? We want to understand all this stuff, because if we do, then, well, great, I'm intellectual about Buddhism. That's not Buddhism. You know, you can be book smart to a degree, and yes, there is wisdom in Buddhism, but there's something a little bit deeper when we talk about wisdom in Buddhism. It's a wisdom combined with ethical conduct and concentration, that threefold training, that becomes the catalyst for us to become awakened and enlightened and realize nirvana. So just trying to understand it, you know, I think that will be challenging. You have to understand it at a fundamental level, not an intellectual level. Intellectual level can help, but fundamental is what we're really striving for. And again, these are one of those things where, heck, you just make a little chip in there in understanding impermanence, that's a big thing. So don't go, I need to understand all of it. You know what? We're probably not going to understand all of it, but we need to understand, as I mentioned this episode so far, the basic building blocks of it. Because when we look at impermanence, we're going, that is a good and bad thing. And I don't really want to use those terms, but, you know, good and bad thing. So the bad thing is, well, we're not understanding what impermanence really is. So we're creating those karmic actions based upon the three fires, because when we're trying to connect and we're trying to keep safe this belief in a permanent, unchanging, independent self. But the good part about this is impermanence is what gives rise to everything. It gives rise to us right now. If a prior existence didn't essentially decrease, die, right, that karma would never have made it to me. And the same goes for you and all other conditioned phenomena. So it helps give rise to future existences. And we can go and look at, well, yes, not everything is perfect in my life and everything else, impermanence, of course, karma as well. There's nothing we can do with that, just if we're just going to look at it. We have to go with what we have and move forward. And that's where the Buddha's teachings come in. So let me take you back to the time of the Buddha. And this is a great quote, if you will, or teaching of the Buddha. He goes, all conditioned things are impermanent. They are phenomena subject to birth and death. When birth and death no longer are, the complete silencing is joy. And so just like I've been talking about, what he's saying is that all conditioned things, like you and me, we're conditioned. We are a temporary grouping of things, of five aggregates. And this temporary grouping of things, that you all hear about suffering in Buddhism or dukkha, right? This grouping that we're all in right now is dukkha, is suffering. So this impermanent nature of ourselves is suffering, because it doesn't last. Even from moment to moment, we are constantly changing. So because we don't fundamentally understand that, like the Buddha does, or his enlightened followers, they got it. They reside in nirvana, which I'll get to in a second. But we don't understand it, so we start creating these unwholesome karmic actions and just continue this cycle, right? And he's saying that essentially is the problem, because we are subject to birth and death, arising and decreasing, right? So birth and death. And that constant cycle is just wearing, right? And that's creating suffering. You may be going, I am the happiest person in the world right now. I am super rich and I got everything I want to. Doesn't matter. We are all subject to birth and death. And we are all in this samsaric cycle. So even if you're like, I'm totally happy right now, that's great. You know, no one's saying that's not great or anything else like that. But we are all subject to eventually get sick, and we're all going to die, and we're all going to face different difficulties and challenges in our lives, and a bunch of different things. But ultimately, fundamentally, we are a temporary grouping of things. So that's what he's trying to say here, is like, we're going to die eventually, and then this karma is going to give rise to another existence, and another existence, and another existence. The cycle continues on and on and on. And so the problem is that doesn't end. And this is going on for who knows how long, right? We are just, in our few couple of decades we'll be existing in this life, we are just a current existence right now, right? Then he goes, when birth and death no longer are, the complete silencing is joy. And this goes to nirvana, right? Or nibbana in Pali. And so this is where you see where he became enlightened. He became the Buddha, of course, right? And when he went to parinirvana, final nirvana, that was it. He was not going to give rise to another existence. And when his enlightened followers, who had complete enlightenment, you know, there's different stages or levels, but the ones that will not be coming back again, they were done. There's also ones that would maybe come back a couple more times, for example, but they were guaranteed to be on that path, just like he was, to no longer come back again. Eventually, they will no longer continue into samsaric existence. He's saying not continuing the samsaric existence insofar as forced rebirth is that joy. So when he was in this existence, and let's go to the Buddha right now with some permanence, right? When he was in this world right now in the temporary grouping of things, so even the Buddha, temporary grouping of things, the five aggregates, right? He was not creating karma like we create karma. Remember I talked about wholesome and unwholesome, right? He was doing something called karma without remainders. So when we are creating karma right now, it's with remainders. And so we're creating what's called fetters in Buddhism, basically chain. We're chaining ourselves to this cycle. He was not doing anything with his karma that would bind him or force him to be in continued rebirth. That is remarkable. And that's essentially where we want to get to as well. We don't want to be creating karma that traps us here, right? We want our actions to be without these consequences of forced rebirth, which is suffering in Buddhism. So he's saying, hey, when you actually get to nirvana, that's going to be where you want to be, because it's going to make sure you don't continue in this cycle of forced rebirth. Now, I like to always give you some other Buddhist monastics' take on this, right? One of the Buddhist monks that I've always enjoyed and respected is Venerable Thich Nhat Hanh. And so he said this, if you suffer, it is not because things are impermanent. It is because you believe things are permanent. When a flower dies, you don't suffer much because you understand that flowers are impermanent. But you cannot accept the impermanence of your beloved one, and you suffer deeply when she passes away. Isn't that true? So like we can, of course, as I mentioned at the very beginning of this episode, we know impermanence happens. Like, of course, you know, the leaves are going to fall off the tree when, you know, fall comes, right? We know the flower won't exist forever. We see impermanence all around us. But when it comes to something we are really connected to, we see even more clinging, craving, grasping, right? We don't want impermanence to happen, especially to someone we love. And that is one of the most challenging parts, especially being a practicing Buddhist, right? We are, of course, human. We're sentient beings, and that has to be very challenging because we're not enlightened right now. And it doesn't mean that, for example, you know, the Buddha, that he was this cold person that didn't care, you know, if somebody passed away. He actually was all around impermanence. including with his own family. For example, when his father was sick and was about to pass away, he went to see him. And when his father died, he was one of the people that carried him, right? So this is something that you may go, he did that? Yeah, he was the Buddha, but he understood, of course, his role and family, right? Now, did he cry and everything else? No. Was he probably sad to a degree? Yes, I would probably think so. But what we're seeing is he was this supreme enlightened being who understood impermanence at a deep level. He understood, yes, of course it's sad that my father passed away, for example. But he understood this much bigger picture at a fundamental level that allowed him to be there in a way that I think only we can really dream about or even, you know, contemplate about. It's at a much deeper level. So, you know, everything from love and everything else in Buddhism, it's a much deeper level when you're at enlightened. Because even right now, our love is impermanent. You know, we have conditions to it, right? And so when you look at an enlightened being, it's this much broader concept. So this teaching on impermanence is a good and bad thing because it's helping us understand our goal in Buddhism. We want to break down the belief in a permanent, unchanging, independent self. This is what all Buddhists are doing. We are working to break down that false illusionary belief. And we all understand that there's a false illusionary belief in this permanent, unchanging, independent self. We all get that in Buddhism as Buddhists. But trying to essentially crack that walnut and understand what's inside and really fundamentally understand that, that's challenging. And we accept that and we practice. So you don't have to beat yourself up going, you know, I need to intellectually understand impermanence, you know, to really become a Buddhist. No, it's okay. Understanding basically what it is and understanding this will be a long process because we are just the latest incarnation, if you will. And so this is something that's been going on for a while. We've been conditioned, if you will, for a very long time. And that's something we have to break. Another Buddhist monk that I want to give you a quote from. So this is my teacher, also passed away, Venerable Master Xingyun. And he goes, and this, I like this one because when we think about impermanence, you know, we're all, oh, this could be a bad thing, right? Here's what he said. Properly understood, the concept of impermanence can be a great aid in difficult situations. He went on to say, impermanence tells us that nothing stays the same. It teaches us that things can change for the better if we truly work to better our circumstances. And when he was doing his teaching, he was giving some examples, for example, that I've cut out of there, of like, you know, different situations and how impermanence can help there and how you can understand it. But this is really important. It's something I want to leave you with as well. We are using impermanence as a teaching aid. When you look back to the time the Buddha and his monastics were alive, and even after that, they would actually do a practice, which isn't really practice anymore, but they would even go to like graveyards and meditate in graveyards, contemplate impermanence all around them. I mean, how much more stark can you really be with impermanence than seeing deceased people around you, right? A graveyard. And that was something, even to me, I'm trying to, you know, visualize what they might have encountered and what they might have seen and everything, right? But that was important to them because they were doing this on purpose. They needed to shock themselves to impermanence in a very stark, very strong way, right? Because they were determined to become enlightened. That was important to them. And this was a way they were doing that. And again, it's not something that you see practice anymore, but you can work on the practice of impermanence in many different ways in your daily practice. When we are going out in nature, look for impermanence around you. When you see maybe somebody who's sick, right? You know, maybe it's a family member. Use that. Of course, you want to help, you know, your sick family member, but you want to use that understanding of impermanence. When you get sick, for example, you know, maybe you got the cold, right? well, you're going to get better, of course, hopefully. You know, most people do. And so you realize, okay, you know, I got the sniffles right now. That's not normally how my body functions, right? I've got something my body's fighting, but I'm going to get better, right? And you get better. And so you understand there was impermanence there. Your body was changing, right? It was changing to fight that infection. But we're seeing impermanence in many different ways. And a lot of times we want to push away the understanding of impermanence, just like, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh was talking about. We want to push that away because we don't really want to confront ourselves with that. We want to do things that shield us from the pain, the stark reality of what impermanence is. And it's a comfort, you know, that we do, because really confronting it is scary. And that's definitely true. So when we are practicing impermanence, we are using the teachings of the Buddha. And then we look in broader, for example, Mahayana, we have Buddhism, Bodhisattvas that are also there to help us. But we are looking at them to help us understand impermanence, to be there for us on this Buddhist path. So we're not alone. And of course, we have Buddhist monks and you have lay practitioners, you know, Dharma friends at your temple, for example, or even online if you don't have one near you. Everyone's there with you in this same issue, if you will. We're all trying to really understand impermanence because it's so important for us to break down that belief in a permanent, unchanging, independent self so we can be truly liberated. And you may be going, oh, what happens after I break down this permanent, unchanging, independent self? What does that mean for me? Nirvana. If you look at the Buddha, and I'm just going to give you him before we end this episode, look at him. He was, and of course we don't see him in our life right now, but you look at the paintings and statues, right? He wasn't unhappy, right? You don't see him really scowling or, you know, just looking sad, right? It's typically where he has like a slight smile, right? Very subtle. And this is an enlightened being. There was nothing that was phasing him insofar as understanding impermanence. He had broken free of this three fires, three poisons. So now he truly lived as he should live in this existence. So does that mean he still had aches and pains as he got older? Absolutely. Did he get sick, you know, from eating something bad and he died from it? Yes, he did. And so there was plenty of situations where he even saw his entire clan was eventually wiped out. Was that pretty shocking to him? Was that probably pretty strong? I would assume so. There was impermanence really bad there, right? But he was not swayed by that insofar as being taken off the Buddhist path. And he was an enlightened being. He fully understood this. That's where we want to go. But he was, in a way, not blown around. As I said, swayed, right? He was not blown around by the conditions around him. It's almost like you're walking through a hurricane force winds, right? And being able to walk through without it even affecting you. That is where we want to get to. That is truly remarkable because that hurricane force winds, that's not our true existence. Walking peacefully, normally, as the Buddha did and as the line of followers are, that's our goal. And don't worry about having to get this all figured out right now. That's why we do Buddhist practice, daily Buddhist practice, because we're going to slowly polish that stone. We're going to slowly chip away. We're slowly going to clean that window, that mirror, right? And all of those steps are important for us. Do you have any questions about impermanence? This was just a very quick overview, and I'm sure you have lots of questions and there's a lot to think about here. But if you have any questions, leave me a message on my website, alanpito.com. You can also leave a message to this episode on Spotify or on social media. You can reply to a post of mine with a comment or send me a message from there. I look forward to talking with you in our next episode. Thank you.